All right, Thrive Nation, on today's show, we are interviewing the prolific inventor, Jovan Hutton Pulitzer. And on today's show, he drops so many knowledge bombs. My brain almost couldn't contain this much wisdom being imparted at one time. But on today's show, Jovan Hutton Pulitzer talks about how he developed his first patent while still in junior high school, why you must learn to sell and to market for everything to work, why you must document as an inventor, the power of pattern recognition, patent ownership, and entrepreneurship, why the access to information truly empowers today's entrepreneurs, how Elon Musk's self-driving cars work, how Twitter works, how patents and inventions work, and what the Russian intelligence statement, "There is no truth in the news and no news in the truth," means. All this and more on today's mind-expanding edition of the Thrive Time Show on your radio and podcast as we interview the prolific inventor, Jovan Hutton Pulitzer.
Some shows don't need a celebrity narrator to introduce the show, but this show does. Two men, eight kids, co-created by two different women, 13 multi-million dollar businesses. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Thrive Time Show.
Now, 3, 2, 1, here we go!
We started from the bottom, now we're here. We started from the bottom, and we'll show you how to get here. We started from the bottom, now we're here. We started from the bottom, now we're here. We started from the bottom, now we're here. We started from the bottom, now we'll show you how to get here.
Yes, 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 and yes! Mr. Jovan, welcome on to the Thrive Time Show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And I always love to talk and inspire people hoping to dream it, because if you can dream it, you can do it. That's my motto.
Now, let me ask you this, because you've had so much success now, and I know you don't like to list out your accolades, but your career is so vast and you've done so many things. Can you kind of just share with our listeners just a brief summary of your career up to this point? Because I feel like everybody's going to bump into something that you've helped to create that they know about.
I just happened to be blessed with a particular talent that manifests itself in several different ways. And that's truly, it comes down to pattern recognition. And why I say pattern recognition, whether you're selling to America or you're selling to clients, or whether you're doing software, or whether you're dealing with patents, everything is about patterns. And when you can launch a product and you understand the patterns of what people want or where the gaps in the marketplace are, and you respond to those gaps, that's where you can create great success. So a lot of people interact with my work and don't realize that it's me. And I tell people, don't get freaked out about this, because I'm going to talk a little bit about technology, but don't let my visual throw you, because I am a nerd, yes, but I'm hiding out in a biker's body. It's just kind of like my camouflage, so don't get thrown by that, right?
Right.
And so most people know me from scanning, what's called Scan to Connect or Scan Commerce. It simply means, you know, when you use your mobile phone or even on your desktop, right? You just open your browser and you enter in a barcode number, whether it be from a book, a tape, on your computer, your hardware on your desk, or your Cheetos. Doesn't matter. And it pulls up the information of the company. That's the platform I created. So long ago in the mid 90s, I realized that this thing called the internet was coming along. Most people were going to learn it by words. You heard of it as keywords. And that's why you learned Yahoo.com before there was ever a Google. But you didn't see there was like 123.84.91.011 underneath it, because you can't really remember those numbers. And so I realized it actually works in reverse, too. If a word can mean a numbered destination on the internet, can't a number mean a destination for a product on the internet? So while everybody had codes have been around since the 1950s, first used in grocery stores in the 70s, but it only meant, hey, a loaf of bread, charge this, inventory in, inventory out. I realized, hey, that really can be a communication platform. And so I set out building the engine, the platform that would teach people that if you can see a code, if you see that cue, we call them cues originally. The software is called See Our Cue, and that's where you get the term cue codes from. If you could see it, it would cue you there's something underneath. So you just use whatever device you had at the time, whether it be tethered to your computer or when mobile phones came about, and bam, you can get to the code. The rest of my career has been about marketing and creating personalities, bringing new personalities on TV. And many times a day, you use what my patents were designed for and just don't realize it's this country boy who came up with that wacky idea, and now everybody uses it.
So did you have a team of people that helped you to develop your first patent?
My very first patent that I actually worked on was literally when I was in junior high. And I know that sounds weird, but I know you're in Oklahoma, you'll get this, right? I raised rabbits.
Oh.
I raised rabbits for the real pure reasons of I love to barbecue them, and I could sell them to the local snake farm as feed.
Are you serious? Are you serious? You would sell them to a snake farm?
I'm 100% serious, right?
Oh, wow.
And so, since rabbits could repeat, right, replicate so fast, I had a nice little business going. But I had a problem with the feeders that when the feed would come down in the feeders and the dust would be in there and the dew got in it, it would actually cause the feed to, should we say, stack or clump in the slide part. Mm. And so for a shop competition, I actually took rabbit feeders, redesigned them. It's how you get them today that actually has a screen mesh bottom so that dust drops out today. It's how all feeders are made. But that was what got me started. I got inspired by a shop teacher that actually got into it, me into it. And then because of the way my weird brain thinks, it just became part of my career, doing hundreds of patents, 189 countries, and I have worked exclusively with the same patent counsel that I work with now for 34 years, and I wouldn't even consider using anyone else.
So how would you describe your educational background?
Which time, which part? I'm a continual student. I study all the time. Give you an example. Let's start from now and go backwards.
Yeah.
I believe that... you know, we're living in part of the greatest time in the world right now for information. Now, here's how I mean it. I'm going to jump back from my childhood. I'm going to jump back to the present. Then I'm going to go back. I was never exposed to computers in school. In fact, well, I take that back. I had a laptop. Now, my laptop compared to your laptop, because I'm pretty sure you're much younger than me, my laptop was red. Mm. It had two white knobs on it. And if you needed more memory, you shook the hell out of it. And
then oh, Etch-a-Sketch technology.
It's called an Etch-a-Sketch, right?
Right, right.
Right. And so I think in my generation, we had to think of these things in their head. Now jump forward. Since I've always been a weird nerd researcher, my first book series I ever got into was forensic investigation books from the FBI when I was a kid, because I had an agent down the street who was getting rid of courseware and I read it. I'd never really read novels or anything like that in my life. Now today, you have everything you want to know at your fingertips. Think about it, right? In my day, if your local library didn't have a book on policing or crime or forensics, you just didn't get to learn it, which means everybody watching this, literally, it does not matter what you want to know at all. Doesn't matter. If you want to know it, you can research it, you can learn it. Therefore, it doesn't really matter. Do you have the money most of the times? Did you get a chance to go to college? Did you get recruited?
Wow.
The end result for me is I constantly stay in study mode. I'm constantly taking advanced courses, studying for what has to happen in my career. And as a result of being successful, you can now study my case files of my work, my history as an entrepreneur in over 140 universities around the globe.
When did you feel like you were getting traction with your career? Where you thought, oh, wow, that was nice.
Well, I taught myself my first initial big career. I understood that everything works when you can market and can sell. And of course, outdated technology, but this was right when the crazy wave of VHS came out, right? And so back then, the medium, the tape medium, was VHS tapes.
Oh, yeah.
And watching that, I understood that, you know, if you could duplicate them, and back then, you know, it'd be $10 to duplicate a VHS. It was very expensive compared to the times. But VHS tapes were selling in mail order, 60, 70, 80 bucks, very high priced items. It hadn't been commoditized yet. And so I realized there'd be a breakthrough there. So I made two pivots. I made a conscious decision to study the production side of the business and to make sure I understood how these things were produced, because I knew it would create new platforms that weren't ruled within the confines of television, meaning you could get it out and build your audience. And I knew that the bulk of those tapes were being sold direct to consumers. So I literally learned it by taking the trash out. And here's what I mean. Every Tuesday and every Saturday, my local post office would throw away big bags of trash. So anything that a consumer doesn't want goes into that can. You know, we had this thing back then. It was called mail. No, it's like,
what?
Remember, we mail? Had this thing called mail, right? And so when you get all this mail, Monday was direct mail day, Friday, Saturday was direct mail day. And that's when everybody was throwing, going to the post office, and they just throw all these mailers in the trash. And so I asked my local post office, could I take that trash now that it's disposed? And they gave it to me. And so I went home to my garage, and all I looked for was anywhere a product was sold. Didn't matter what it was, but anywhere a product was sold. And I started laying it out in my garage by stacks, okay, by stacks. And you could see the catalogs offering products. You could see who did direct mail, who did credit card inserts or whatever. Once I had them stacked down to that, I found all the different companies, and I set out to meet those companies and ask them, okay, I know you take other people's products, so what's the rules of dealing with you? And I parlayed that into a very interesting direct marketing career, doing billions of dollars of products with companies by marketing to the public. And that's why I say, just like, you know, we're just mentioning Stanford for a moment, you know, those things are MOOCs, right? Those things are training programs. Anybody can take them. What I had to teach myself using alternative means, you can now go online right now, sign up, whether it's people that have done it or whether it's big universities, and you can get a first-class education in how to do the things I talk about.
And when you say MOOC, you're referring to a massive open online class. Is that correct, sir?
That's one level. That's yes. When I say MOOC, it's a massive online class where you can sign up and do it. There's many different levels of it, and yeah, I would recommend it to anyone. My father is, 87, about to be 88, and I've even got him into doing it. You know, there's things you put off in life, and there's things you wish you would have done in life. 20 years ago, there was probably a good excuse for not knowing certain things. Today, there is no excuse for not knowing certain things. And it means if you want to find out what artificial intelligence is, you can go online, take a course, whether you pay for it or get free ones, you can learn and understand what's going on around you.
Now, you are you considered the official, the founder of the QR code?
Understanding 100% where you're coming from and here.
Yeah.
Let me make sure you have it absolutely unerringly correct, because it's very hard in interviews.
Yeah.
Right? You're recording it, I'm recording it. It's very hard in interviews for people because they take liberties and things. Let me give you an example. You know, you want to be very specific when you talk about my career. You want to talk about it 100% accurately. And so every entrepreneur wants it to be 100% accurate. And so when you understand what goes on in the inventing world, it can kind of get confusing. So let me give you an example. What most people know me for is what's called the creation of Scan Commerce,
okay,
Scan Connect, and Scan Direct. Now, what does that mean? That means if you use a code anywhere, to connect to anything remotely, so basically that static physical code, okay,
yeah,
is actually going off and fetching information on a network that's now public coming back. That's what I created. Here's the differences, so you understand the differences, and it's really important to make sure you detail the differences, because sometimes it can really get confusing, right? Bottom line is there's about 100 different types of codes in the world that were created for inventory purposes. Now, here's what I mean for inventory purposes. Bread, butter, cheese, documents, computer parts, shipping parts, manufacturing parts, etc. And so if you go down them, it's how you bought book, record, and tapes. It's how everything's trafficked at Amazon. And so if you look at the different platforms, you know, some are called ISBNs, some are called UPCs, some are 30, some are 40, some are 128. You've got CRQ, which was my first software doing the connection because it has to have a platform. You got things like Dentsu Wave, if you've ever heard of Dentsu Wave.
I've never heard of Dentsu Wave.
Say it again.
I've never heard of Dentsu Wave.
Dentsu Wave is what created the 2D barcode. And I know these can get confusing sometimes. 2D barcodes were referred to as quick response. Now, a long time ago, you could only put a certain amount of information in the barcodes. And I'll give you an example. If you were looking at this product right here, that barcode.
Got it. Yep.
Literally in the physical world, all it says is turn on. What's the number? Where do I go? You know, what is it? And turn off. That's it. A long time ago, this was very limited. And numbers by the digits. It's kind of like the world we went through with area codes, I guess I should say. Okay. And we had to start getting new prefixes.
Yeah.
And so while everybody was trying to expand it, it was very easy to expand on inventory databases. And that's where Dentsu Wave made its incredible breakthrough doing what's called a 2D barcode, which means you could now read two levels of information, right, in the code. Originally, all these codes had to be scanned by sapphire eyes.
Sapphire eyes?
It couldn't be done by simple devices. And so here's the breakthroughs I made, because it's very confusing. And sometimes people like to represent it 100% wrong. Here's what's really key, right? And for many reasons, it's important to get it straight and absolutely represent it right. Number one, barcodes used to be static. They didn't mean anything except inventory. And if you weren't in that company, it meant nothing to you. You couldn't do anything with it. The second big wave in barcodes is they were designed to touch, right? Meaning you had to touch a device, a wand, and in it, it had a sapphire eye in the very tip of it. It actually used a jewel, right? And so barcodes work like this, scan, 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 scan. And their error rate was if you have one error per 1 million scans, that was acceptable because it was considered an industrial item, okay? Then those codes, the device was too much to make. So I invented the first reader that, number one, didn't have to touch the code at all. It actually made the code reflect and lift up off the page. And so when you look at a barcode, well, the reason they're printed that way, black is absorb, white is reflect. And so what I created is how do these things talk outside of closed systems? And how do you do it without having to use very expensive touch devices to do it? So the breakthroughs were made at a time when scanners could not be made less than for about $500 or $600. And that was a real cheap one. I was able to create a scanner for about 28 cents.
What?
That was the real breakthrough. And once they could be read not by contact, then it was easy to jump the platform to where they could be read by the cameras in your phone. Please remember, when I invented transit codes to make them talk over the web, there were no camera phones at all. No such thing as it. We heard rumors of it, but it wasn't coming out. And so think of me as the inventor of the transit. And I'll give you a real good example so you understand what this is. Elon Musk has a series of patents for self-driving cars. One of the advantages he has in that patent is he can do it very efficiently without a tremendous amount of cameras, right? And we know Tesla's really good at it. But what was the real breakthrough, right? So if somebody wrote an article and said, did you know Elon Tesla invented roads? You'd go, that is just screwing nuts. That's misreporting. But what did Elon do for Tesla? Well, you know the little lines printed on the side of the road?
Yes.
You know what they are. Double lines don't pass. Dotted lines mean this. White means this. Yellow means this. Going in curves. Well, he taught the camera to read that off the road, which turned that physical thing, which had been around forever, kind of like barcodes, into a new communication medium. And so that became an advantage over other people by just using something that was existing, turn it into something else. The best example of all is, I don't know how old you are, but probably your parents had pagers, right?
Right.
mom and dad would send each other little love messages or whatever, very limited. That was the paging system. Well, eventually it jumped to mobile phones and you could do SMS, but I could only do it to you if you were on the same carrier. Mm. What's Twitter? Twitter is that old paging system that was very analog, only point to point. And when those patents expired, turned it into something new. And now you have a platform that can talk, that everybody can follow. You can tweet out to everybody. Everybody can see it. It is nothing but repurposed text paging. That's how inventing works.
So how should our listeners think about patents as it relates to inventing products?
When you think about patents, okay, and this is what's really important about patents. There are completely original ideas. There are inspired ideas, and then there are improved ideas, right? It'd be hard to say, like Mike Lindell, who I think maybe you had on, who has patents, you wouldn't say the inventor of the pillow. No, what he did was make a better
pillow. Yeah.
And when you make improvements over existing systems that are novel, unique, and measurable improvements, you actually can improve and get your patent yourself. So a lot of people really misunderstand patents. The second part of it is if you have an incredible, inspired idea to do something completely novel, right? You might follow that. But let's just take the computer mouse for an example. Let's just look at that one invention so you understand how inventions work. The original team creating the mouse on a rollerball had an incredible patent. Phenomenal. Changed the industry, right? Now, that made GUI, right? Graphic user interface, where you could just click and do it, work. It was absolutely fantastic. But let's look at the evolution of a mouse. Well, it went from a ball to an optic, from an optic to a beam.
Got it.
From a beam to wireless, from wireless to long distance wireless, to touchpad or to touch point, then to touchpad. All of those are generational improvements on existing patents. So if you say like a plumber was watching or a baker was watching or whatever, then you actually can improve upon it. And if you can make a material improvement on something, just like I did, if you take a figure a way to make a scanner for dirt cheap that it can be put into anything or teach it to be read off the paper optically versus touching the paper optically,
yeah,
that's considered a brand new invention. So that means if you are a car mechanic and you're tired of seeing all of these brakes wear out and you have a new way to do it that makes perfect sense, that's not throwing asbestos into the environment, and you can make it better and make it cheap enough and you patent that, then you should benefit from the sales of that. But it's not about filing a patent. Anybody can file a patent, right? There's 11 million patents in the world.
Wow.
11 million. Only 1.65% of all patents filed actually get monetized.
So do you consider that to be a low number or a high number?
It's a very high number when you compare that anybody in the world can do a patent. Nothing prevents you from doing a patent. Nothing prevents you from doing your idea. It's about how well you think it out, how well you file it, and how well you prosecute it. Let me give you an example. I use this all the time because it's very easy to understand. It's kind of like the media today, right? Everybody's looking for the story that bleeds, that leads. And so they'll stretch it out, try to get viewers, try to get people to watch. And so if you think about news, news will try to try you like a jury, right?
Right.
And you've got to kind of work your way out of it. They're going to try if you're not doing safeguards to measure what was that, measure what was actually said against the broadcast that goes on the air. Patents are really the same way, right? When you go to the patent office and you file a patent, think of it as a murder case, right? The patent office basically says, you did it, you're guilty. Now, in this case, you're not guilty of a murder, you would be guilty of infringing, right? And so to the patent office, you prosecute it like a murder case. That means you have to prove to the patent office, and it's up to you, not them. They're there to say no, not to say yes. And so you have to prove to them that this is original and novel, and that you do not infringe on anyone else. And that's a pretty complicated process for most people. And that's why, yes, patents can get granted, but if you really don't understand the process, if you don't understand where the money is, I say don't patent the thing, patent the money. That's the real skill. Mm. Well, you could be over in that category of 98% plus that actually, great, you got a patent, it's a useless piece of paper, but did they get monetized? That's the name of the game.
What else do you feel like our listeners need to know about patents?
If you file one patent, right, and your patent is for the very first time you put this over your head, right?
Right.
Headphones. Then you could ostensibly say you were the original inventor of headphones. That'd be a good way to state it, right? But then you have to think about, well, what is it used for? Because you would think that sound suppression headphones would fall into the same category as headphones. No, they don't. They're just to block sound, where one is to give sound. And so that's why there's nuances in all these things, right? And so I think the easiest way to explain Scan Commerce, right, or Scan Connect is if you use a multi-code platform, that's really key, right? Not just one code, a multi-code platform that allows everything in the digital world, not just a product code on a macaroni box. That's only one of 100, right? If you enable that to work and talk, which is what Scan Commerce or Scan Connect is, that's what creates the industry. So I'll give you a good example is, if you had a scanner back in 97, let's say, and you hooked it to your computer, and you were to pick up something from your desk and scan that, what would happen? If you were to scan it on your computer, only two things would happen. The first was nothing. The second was, if it came with a piece of software, it just pop up a little window and it would just show you all the data behind the code, right? Which could be a long string of numbers, but it wouldn't do anything, right? So what you have to get your head around when it comes to Scan Commerce and what that definition means, or Scan to Connect, is it's not the telemetry that comes from the barcode, and it's not the telemetry that comes from the device. It's where can this go on a much broader network and do something totally different than what it was intended. That's the key. Right. And so barcodes existed, barcode software existed. You had companies that were trying to go at it. There was an initiative by Neo something. There was initiatives by Dentsu Wave. There were initiatives, whatever, but nobody had figured out, okay, what can you do with it? So now let's say you have a scanner that can scan these codes and you're going to put it on a person's computer, somebody at home, right? How does it know what to do? How does it know where to go? Because see, you're not a grocery store, you're not a convenience store, you're not saying that was a cigarette or a soda or a chewing gum, right? You don't have that. And so what people forget is none of this is automatic, right? And when you understand none of it is automatic regardless, somewhere somebody had to build a massive database to route this traffic. That's one of the first things we did. We took every known barcode in circulation, primarily at retail first, the stuff you have in your home, right? And if I was sitting right here on mine, and I'm gonna show you this, because this is the easiest way to explain it, we have them around us all day. So we've got air spray, we've got hand cream, we've got wood glue. We've got rubber, I mean, they're everywhere on everything in the world, right?
Right, right.
But they only meant something when you were at the store. Mm. So how did you tell your computer? How did somebody tell the internet what that was and how to do it? Well, I can tell you how to do it. We had to manually enter and connect. We had to create a piece of transit software that we could take every barcode download in the world from every manufacturer of products, and we acquired their codes, And then when that code came in, which would kind of make us look like a big Amazon, what do all these codes mean?
Yeah.
Then we had to have a piece of software that could read that barcode, understand the company, and at least real quickly find that company on the web. And then we had this room full of 200 people working in three shifts a day, every single day of the week. And when that suggestion would come up, it was their job to dig a little deeper into the site and find the exact thing that came up with
this product. How long did this take?
Looking at
how long did the process
database? And that is what's called scan commerce or scan to connect. That's the important thing. It's not that you create a code, and it's not that you create a scanner. You got to make those codes do something, and you got to open it to the public, which is what I did.
How long did it take you to do this?
To create that?
Yeah.
From the ideation standpoint to understanding the architecture standpoint was probably 2 years. The difference between that 2 years and getting to the first demo, the first demonstrable platform product, probably took 6 months. From there, it took a year trying to negotiate with every scanner manufacturer in the United States. Those were the Symbols, the Logix, the Ericssons, all the different people that were out there. We had to try to get somebody to try to make a scanner for us. And the cheapest price we ever got was about $330. Well, you can't add a $330 cost peripheral to a machine. Nobody would buy it. And so we knew that cameras were eventually coming. And so what we had to do was we had to figure out a cheap scanner real quick that we could give away. It was never sold. It was just a giveaway item for the software, CRQ, which stood for see our Q. Wow. These were called Q codes. We had to give them away so we could get people to prime the pump and to understand, wow, codes mean thing and you can scan. And that's why we had to do the breakthrough of the technologies to get them real cheap. That took a year. That took a year of talking with everybody, couldn't do it. And luckily, back then in my television days, Radio Shack was a sponsor of mine. And so I went in and showed them what I could do. I did a simple demo on it. And the president of Radio Shack at the time, after he did it, got up and walked out of the room.
Wow.
So I'm sitting there with the general counsel of the company. Now, they all know me because they sponsor my relevant radio and television show across the country. And I'm thinking, man, did I piss them off? And the attorney's going, I don't really know what happened, right? And so he came back in. And when he came back in, he had the chairman of the company.
Wow.
The chairman of the company sat down, and the president said, Jovan, do your demo. Say nothing. Say nothing. Just do your demo. And I just picked it up and went, whatever product you want to do, he handed me a product. Boom, and there came up on the web page. And he went, wow, I get it. And he told me a story right there on the spot. He told me a story. He said, in the mid-70s, I had a young kid walk through my doors and say, what meaning Radio Shack, right? Tandy Corporation then. And said, if you'll give me $5 million to do what I do, I think I can make you sell a boatload more computers. And at that time, it was the TRS-80 Tandy computer, I believe. And he said, I'll give you 50% of the company if you'll back me. Mm. Now, there were a few complications with that. That was a lot of money back then. Nobody understood computers. And the kid was 17 years old, right? And Radio Shack said, you know, nice pitch, but we don't think we can do that. And they sent the kid away. And he said to me, now this is the chairman saying, in 1976, we sent that kid away because we didn't understand the power of computing or what could be done. And he says, and I don't want you to get away because I think this will be a big breakthrough that will change the way people use codes in the future, because you can literally make anything, talk to the internet, you can complete a financial transaction, you can, you know, pay your bills or whatever. He said, right. We're in. And then he said, I want you to know that kid that came through, that was Bill Gates. And we could have had half of Microsoft if we'd have given him the money.
Wow.
And we made the mistake again, and we're not going to make that mistake again. Now, they ended up doing a deal with them, by the way. They ended up eventually doing a deal with Bill Gates, and they had to get his father to sign the contract to do a deal with what became Radio Shack Corporation, Tandy originally, then Radio Shack. And probably about 20 years ago or so, the president of the company took that original contract, maybe 10 years ago, took that original contract, framed it, and delivered it back to Bill Gates at his birthday party, because it was the very first contract he'd signed with an outside source and had to have his dad sign because he was 17.
Wow, I did not know that story. Now, for people, you are such a fascinating person, and I think I have to listen to this twice to grasp the profundity of what you said. Is there a web address that we can direct people to where they can learn more about you there, sir?
You can just use my hashtag, just my name, hashtag my name, Joe Von Hutton Bulletzer, just a hashtag, go find it. That's the easiest way to do it. You just hashtag #, and my name. That's how you'll find directly stuff that come from me. And you can rely that you're really, looking at my work versus, what people write. Because I've been everywhere accused from being a leprechaun to being Q, the anonymous Q for the conservative movement, to all kinds of things. And so use the hashtag, you'll actually find my work.
Okay, well, folks out there, use the hashtag. Sir, I appreciate you joining us here and for sharing this mind-expanding, eye-opening answers to these questions. It just blows my mind. You're immensely intelligent, and I appreciate you breaking it down to a level that I think I understand. Final question here for you, and then I'll let you get back to doing the things that you do. Is there a book that you would recommend for people out there that are wanting to get involved in inventing, or a documentary, or a place to go where you'd say, hey, for the for the young inventors out there, this is a good book for you or a good resource?
I think, there's a lot of great books out there. My book way back when was Business at the Speed of Light, or Speed of Thought, by Bill Gates, but everything has changed since then. It's a completely different thing. But I think probably one of the most inspirational books that can make a difference in somebody's life to read is a book by Robert Rodriguez. Do you know who Robert Rodriguez is?
I do not.
Robert Rodriguez, most people know him from the Kid Spy series, from the Dusk to Dawn series with George Clooney, the vampire series and stuff. He's done a lot of great movies. But he wrote a very good book called A Rebel Without a Crew. Now, it's not a clue, but a crew, because he came into Hollywood at a time when big studios basically were trying to control their space, and they weren't letting new people in. And so he had to figure out a way, how could he get his work known, and how could he get a break in the movie industry? Now, subsequently, he has become wildly successful, one of the most successful producers out there monetarily. And the way he did it was he had to teach himself to shoot in a completely different style and to not accept the norms and to actually be that rebel who could pull off a movie when he really didn't have a crew. It was just him and a few of his buddies. And so I think from an inspirational standpoint, that's really good. And I think if you follow some of his later works, there's a lot of mythology about people that are successful. And it's like the old Russian adage, and we know it today, right? But it's the old saying that there is no truth in the news, and there is no news in the truth. Everybody, no matter who they are trying to make a name for themselves. And so they're all jockeying for their own little position to stretch something here, to stretch something there, right? Or to twist it out of context to try to get people to read or be sensational. Same thing in the business world. Same thing happens, right? You have big executives that will poo-poo on you and kick you out the door and say, oh, that's a nut, that's a freakazoid. And that's why I say recommend looking at Robert Rodriguez's work, because when you think of the multi-billion dollar movie industry and how connected and how good old boy it is, you learn a lot of secrets. And it's kind of the secrets your guys saw on email. And it's just making sure that you can hold people to the word and expect. It's like for me in my entire world, every conversation I have, every one of these interviews I have is all documented, recorded, and duped. So you have exactly what's being said when you said it in context.
Yes.
And so I would recommend probably one of the best things I've ever learned in this industry, is when you're sharing your ideas with investors, when you're sharing your ideas with either even people around you, when you're doing interviews like this, simultaneously record them. Mm-hmm. Because in this new world where, you know, there's no truth in the news and no news in the truth, people take tremendous liberties. And you got to be able to make sure you document those liberties so you can hold them accountable when they go out of line. And then you can really reach out and have some legal teeth and shut it down. And, you know, they actually have consequences for it. So I would tell you, document everything, especially if you're pitching or you're coming up with an idea. Document, 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 because sometimes that's the only protection you have.
I love that. Document, 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 document. That's powerful. And then could you repeat the phrase about the news again one more time? Because that's good stuff.
There is a Russian intelligence statement that basically paraphrased says that there is no truth in the news.
Yeah.
And there is no news in the truth. I'll give you a really good example. You can read a news story, let's say about things going on, and you'll hear the, you'll see the headline and says, this was not, you know, whatever. They'll do a controversial headline. And when you get to the bottom, right, you'll see some little thing and it basically either cite an anonymous source or twist it a little bit, or they lead with their question that they want people to think like, this was not true and here's how we did it. Mm. And then they'll go ahead and write a story, right? And then at the beginning said, well, that was really the question that I started at the beginning, but I found out, wow, it was really true and it was really this and this is why. Well, you know, a lot of people know that people don't read to the end of articles, or
yes,
people don't watch the entire programs. And today we live in a very abbreviated society. And for me as an individual, I learned this because one of my very first litigation suits that I had to deal with was fighting all the large automobile manufacturers that were copying a product. It became one of the largest suits of all time, perfecting the Lanham Act, which was one. And so when you learn how to deal with those things and put them in their place and make sure they're documented, that's why you want to do what I suggested, because the reality today is, I don't know what it is. I don't know if we've lost our attention spans. I don't know if people are only catering to a very short attention span crowd.
Yeah.
But you can always, especially doing interviews, you know, you start out one way, then you actually kind of find out by doing the interviews exactly what their intent is to try to do. And so inventing a product's no different. And so that statement is, there is no truth in the news. And conversely, there's just absolutely no news in the truth. Nobody wants to really read drawn out story about something. They want it to be sensational. So, you know, throw in a few dead people, throw in a few miscues, count a lot of anonymous sources, and you can whip something up and you might get traction. Although the greatest thing in the world today that's finally come about is, as you understand how to deal with these things and deal with people, there's actually incredible legal remedy now to do it, especially in this world where people consider themselves journalists but aren't actually certified journalists, and they kind of think they're protected by it, but they actually don't have that profession. It's just kind of something they do. They're not actually in it. And so that's why I think you're going to see a big change. I think what you're really going to find going in the future, and it's probably one of the greatest industries for people to maybe search about. If I was going to tell a young person going into business today, I'd say, number one, get into drone flying, right? Great industry, great pay. Get into coding for mobile, great pay. And then, as ironically as it sounds, this new media is really something that's going to be totally reworked. I think what you're going to find, especially in 2021, Yep. It's going to be a really different way that media is handled. And a lot of the big companies out there have taken a lot of liberties with news and what's fact and what's real. But all of a sudden, because, and this is how change and crisis presents opportunity. Remember, we don't learn when it's good. We learn when it's a problem and horrible. That's when we change. And I think some of the greatest things, as I talk to various councils and stuff and watch it and other stuff, I find going into like 2021, you're going to see a whole new standard set. And of course, with anything, it has to be adjudicated by laws, which means they'll reach out, they'll take someone, they'll use them as an example, right? Establish the case law, and then it goes boom across the country. So I think you're going to see some really interesting opportunity in the law and legal field, a lot of it around libel statutes, liabilities, right, and stuff like that. And so I would tell people, too, another incredible opportunity out there in this new digital age would be entertainment attorneys that understand the digital ways. And also the IP and rights assertment. Good example is for inventors. When people intentionally misstate things, what they don't see is it can hurt patents or it can hurt opportunities over here.
Got it.
Right? And so it can make those opportunities go away because somebody's trying to do a story. Hmm. Well, now, thank God, especially in the IP world, when you have patents that generate revenues, when you have patents or license, and you show, hey, this story is not true and it hurts here, you actually have the recourse now to come back because you can literally prove directly how it happened from those things. And so I think that's a phenomenal area. I think this old school good old boy think, hey, let's just store it up, let's play, let's do this, let's stir crap, right? I think it's going to be totally gone, and you're going to see probably the most incredible revolution and news and facts and than we've ever seen before. And I think, going back to that statement, there is no truth in the news and there is no news in the truth. I think you're going to find a whole new way of auditing the media. It's going to be fantastic when you watch what's coming down the pipe to be able to audit media people, to pull customers list, right? There's, you know, we talk about some of these protections coming down the pipe. You're going to see 230 DSOA, but you're going to find, even like with patents and products, right? This all stuff coming up, you've seen a lot of just funky stories. You're about to see where they'll kind of reach into these quote unquote media companies, get their list, and actually be able to depose people watching and see what they thought. And the person's own audience will actually work against the media people because they say, well, this is where I got this impression. And I think, if I was telling anybody to get into a space, get into that space. It's going to be, it's probably going to be like the cases in the 80s of suing for stop smoking or asbestos or whatever. It's going to be the new frontier in digital litigation going after media companies for not actually reporting the facts as they were doing. So that's what I would tell people if you were looking for something to get into. Do it. And inventing is what inventing does. If you can think it, you can do it. If you want to file a patent, go for it. You can be anything you want to be. But in a world where somebody claims to be a broadcaster just because they can do a podcast or video, it doesn't really make them a broadcaster. It just kind of gives them reach. And I think there's going to be a lot of monetization in that reach. There's going to be a lot of monetization in the business world. They're now going to be looking for new sources to get business information. So I think right now in this horrible crisis that we're facing in our country, I think now more than ever, you're going to see new opportunities in media, especially digital media, than you've ever seen before, because crisis is only change attempting to occur. And it's those changes that create brand new opportunities.
Brother, I appreciate you for joining us today, and you've dropped so many knowledge bombs about the news, about why crisis presents opportunity, about document, about patents. I mean, there's just so much there. And again, I appreciate you for taking your time, because I know time is your most precious asset. So thank you so much for being here.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Take care. And now, without any further ado, 3, 2, 1, boom!
claim your tickets to the Thrive Time Show 2-day interactive business workshop for free, all you have to do is to subscribe to the Thrive Time Show on iTunes, leave an objective review, and send us confirmation at info@thrivetimeshow.com. To claim your star in the National Star Registry, we can't help you.
My name is Jay Schroeder, and I am from Nashville, Tennessee. A lady I used for coaching told her I was looking for some sort of conference to get my mind thinking about business, and she found this, and I just flew out here a week later. No, I didn't think it was a scam. It piqued my interest because it's how I think. I think entrepreneurially, and it just, to me, it right away it clicked. I've learned that our systems are not exactly where they need to be, and what we need to do, there's a plan in place. He has a plan in place to get you from where you are to where you need to go. It's great, man. It's not your typical corporate. It's got a phenomenal vibe. I love all the sayings on the wall. I love it. Love the smell. The smell outside is great. I love it. It's casual, but yeah, he knows exactly what he's talking about. There's nothing worse than standing and walking, listening to a guy in a suit rambling at you. Love it. Great presentation. Yeah, interaction's great. You definitely feel comfortable asking a question if you need to. Questions from the rest of the people in the audience also helps. I mean, maybe stimulate more questions that you have. If you have an entrepreneurial mindset and you're trying to get from where you are to where you want to go, you have to come to this. They don't need to upsell you. Their product speaks for itself. If it's what you're looking for, it's what you're looking for. I would recommend it to anyone who wants to build their brand, build their business. Just the day and one, the day, not even 2-day session yet. I mean, I've already got 100 ideas that I want to implement. And I'd recommend it for anyone who has an entrepreneurial mindset and who wants to build their business.